He kōna e ipurangi tēnei nā te reo irirangi o Aotearoa.
So you won't know it, so looking at it, so this is one of our, this is version 2, one of our Storminators.
Yep, like Terminator, but Storminator.
What this system is doing, if you look up there, you can see this copper. Mm-hmm. This is a copper roof.
Kia ora, it's me, Kadambri Ragukumar, with another episode of Voices This Week. I'm with Aisling O'Sullivan in the University of Canterbury campus, where today she's showing me what's been keeping her busy. She's an associate professor in ecological engineering here at the university.
Now, the concern we have with copper roofs is that as soon as water touches the roof, so when it rains, it basically dissolves away some of that metal.
Aisling and her colleague Tom Cochrane worked together on this award-winning and patented invention, Storminator. It removes heavy metals like copper or zinc from roof stormwater in urban areas. It actually uses mussel shells, waste products from our green-lipped mussel farming industry, mainly in the South Island.
Half of them go to landfill at the moment.
We're walking around the campus around the engineering buildings. Aisling tells me that essentially the systems are made of layers of crushed shells working as filters.
We've installed a bunch of those around campus and they are treating roof runoff from metal roofs through shell systems and going into our waterways and removing over 90% of the metals that would otherwise just go straight into the waterways. So we're reducing the metal footprint of the university.
Using mussel shells again, Aisling these days has also been working on how nitrate leaching can be combated in waterways in South Island. More on how shortly in the story. But this fascination with waterways started many years ago for Aisling, in her childhood actually.
I was raised in Ireland and I always was outdoors and I always had a fascination for stormwater drains and water. Sounds strange, but I would always open the drains, find out where the water was going to, why it changed colour. Like I really did. Used to set these little exploration things for the kids in our street and we'd go off and find the source of the river, the source of the Awa. If you go back far enough, most communities grew up around waterways because it was the source of Mahinga Kai. It was a way of navigation through for trade. It was the healthiest ecosystems, really, in playing them. So that's probably in any culture why water's been really important. I guess in Ireland, the fact it rains so much, you can't get away from it. And there is so much when it rains going into the rivers, so in terms of their flooding. I think that's where my love of nature always was, just being outdoors, exploring. So I was always curious about nature and being able to practically explore that fairly unrestricted helped me understand nature more. It's a lot of folklore as well. So, yep, my native language is what we call Gaeilge. The English word for that is Irish, so it's not a... Some people think it's English with a different accent, which I'm speaking now. It's not. It's Gaeilge. It's a totally different language. And a lot of, yes, the folklore we learned growing up would have been... It was through Irish, and it would have... around storytelling, around waterways, so in some ways similar to what I understand is Te Ao Māori.
Aisling very early on in her career realised how land colonisation impacted the well-being of people through industrial contamination and waterways. From Ireland, Aisling found herself in Oklahoma, working on indigenous land contaminated by mining.
The site is called Tar Creek site and it was the number one designated Superfund or worst impacted site in contaminated site in North America. That might give you an idea of the extent of how polluted it was. In Oklahoma, I was part of a research team that were working, really trying to help remediate a land that was hugely impacted from abandoned mines. So these are lead zinc mining companies came into Native American lands in particular, mine them. Then when the price of the metal fell out of the market, they went off and abandoned the area and they left the land fairly devastated, and that included the waterways. So I was part of a research group at the University of Oklahoma that were helping to remediate that land, and we worked very closely with the Quapaw tribe, which is one of the Native American indigenous tribes. And that was really, really good eye-opener for me shocked to see how large corporations had come in, mined raw materials, and then when it wasn't profitable enough for them, they left without being accountable for the communities they impacted. Because when you mine a material, you create what's called a waste and an overburden, particularly if it's a part of its surface mining, and that's just left behind. Now, because that waste might just look like rock and soil, but because it's so high concentration of metals, nature won't grow on there because it's toxic. And so the communities there weren't aware of this when it rains. And so that water would run off through these dumps of soil and rock, and that would just leach out such huge quantities of lead and zinc that nothing would grow in the waterways. They just totally abandoned and totally annihilated waterways. So my experience in Oklahoma was that the communities were invariably lower socioeconomic communities, and so they had very few choices as to be able to simply move. In fact, there were recommendations to move the whole town, but then you're moving the whole community of where they fuck a papa to, and that might be an easy solution in a Western viewpoint. We just move everybody. But actually, it's not. You know, you've got connections to the land. Your ancestors are there, so that wasn't necessarily this solution which was being proposed. And I guess coming to Aotearoa in New Zealand, and I know the strong connection with Indigenous Māori to the mana whenua, how important that is. And so it's the same. A solution is not to move the people. It's actually to not have the impacts, but where we have a legacy of some impacts, we try and find solutions that align with cultural values of reconnecting back to land.
Here in Canterbury, Aisling's been working with her PhD students to find solutions to contaminants leaching into waterways, and a large part of her work involves consultation with local iwi. As New Zealand races towards its ambitious target for nitrate reduction by 2025, getting to that goal means using innovative technology, so Aisling's work becomes pretty crucial.
In the last decade, a lot of landscape around here has been changed from crop and grazing to dairy farming. But the Canterbury Plains are very porous soils. So when you apply fertilizer to those soils, it goes through them quicker than it might, say, in other areas, even in some of the Waikato region. So part of it is the challenge with nitrate is it's when we apply excess fertilizer to the land. Limestone I had used in research before, and I lived in Oklahoma, and that was the common material that was used to take out acidity of water that was impacted from mining activities. But I also looked at what makes up limestone. It's calcium carbonate. And when I moved here to Aotearoa, New Zealand, I looked at what are large voluminous waste materials. And waste seashells were one of those. And when I was, one of my first PhD students was looking at solving this water runoff problem from Stockton Mine. And instead of using large mined limestone, we looked at the purity of it. It wasn't very pure, the particular one we're looking at. But yet nearby, in the Nelson Marbury region, we had these stockpiles of waste seashells. So we thought, we'll give them a try. And so we did some lab tests. We did some what we call dissolution tests to see how much calcium carbonate they could produce. And in fact, they out-competed the limestone. So that's really where the start of using waste seashells began.
And there's no dearth of that. The New Zealand mussel industry produces over 90,000 tonnes of shells every year as waste.
We're helping to divert that as a way of reducing waste going to landfill. I mean, everything in life is cyclical. We call it the law of mass conservation. You're just changing one thing from one form to another. You can't create something from nothing, and you can't get rid of something in it to go into ether of space. It's all cyclical. And so anything we do in our engineering designs really should be cyclical, because we're reflecting that basic law of nature. And that's sometimes referred to as regenerative.
We're walking next to the stream that runs behind the engineering block here. One of the first trials of the system actually happened right here. These days, the technology is being trialled long-term with Fonterra and Takaka, Naitahu Properties, Hagley College, and a few other places in South Island. It's been close to two decades since Aisling first arrived in New Zealand to work with transforming waterways through engineering. I suppose she's oceans away from her home in Ireland, but still connected in so many ways.
When I did come to Aotearoa, New Zealand, and I reflected on that importance of water and culture and how it's part of you, there's a phrase in Gaeilge that we use, which is loosely kind of translates as I am the water or the giver of life. It's Uisce Baha. Uisce Baha can also be interpreted as whiskey by some folks, so water is the giver of life, of whiskey. And in Te Reo Māori, it's Ko te wai, ko te ora, nā me katoa. I am water and water is the giver of life. So it's a similar kind of relationship of healthy water and human well-being, which when you think about it, it is very obvious, but not everybody maybe reflects on how important or puts enough emphasis on how important that is to keep waterways healthy, and then it helps our well-being as communities. We always draw back to and reflect on the simplicity of things, I think, and we follow those basic principles, it's easier to achieve good outcomes.
And that's Voices today with me, Kadambri Raghukumar. Thanks for listening. You can find Voices on all your favourite podcast platforms like Apple, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, or wherever you find your podcasts from. You can also find Voices and other great RNZ podcasts on the RNZ website. That's www.rnz.co.nz. And don't forget, you can also follow us on Instagram as rnz_voices. Thanks for listening. Today's episode was mixed by Jeremy Ansell.